thought week two couldn't be any better than week one, then you'd be absolutely right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the TBD College Football Show. With your host, I'm Mason. Along for the ride with me, my brother in Christ, Isaac. And our producer, Joey, is out sick today. He's not feeling well with a sinus infection. We'll miss him, but we still got everything for you. After the craziness that was week one, week two, it's still going to be good. It's just not going to be anywhere near as wild as last week was, right? Week one was absolutely explosive. We saw major upsets, defensive masterclasses, and we saw Lee Corso's retirement from College Game Day. And of course, he picked Brutus in the shoe where it all started. And he even went undefeated in his picks for week one, which is insane considering that he picked Florida State to upset Alabama. So yeah, he went undefeated, and I wish we could say the same. Right here, you're going to see our pick records. And for the first time ever, we actually have a three-way tie for first place in the, what is it, 6 years we've been doing this college football podcast, and we've never had a three-way tie for first place. So 7-6, all of us, including week zero and week one. I had a really bad time in week one. I went 4-5. Joey and Isaac both went 5-4. I would have tied them had I just picked Tennessee. I don't know what's wrong with me. Don't ask. I obviously don't know ball, just like the guy on TikTok said this past week when we released our rankings. Anyway, week one review. We're going to start out with our hot seat update. Last year, we said when he got this job, before he'd even started, he was already on the hot seat. Yep, that's right. It's Kalen DeBoer from Alabama. Alabama, they lose their first season opener since 2001. They were 23-0. They're now 23-1. This team, man, they just look unmotivated. They were out there jogging around, having a good old time, letting Florida State run all over them up and down the field. I mean, you've got rumors swirling of players door dashing food to the hotel at 2 a.m., sneaking their girlfriends into their hotel rooms, and even being late for the team bus. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that all of that's true. It's just what's swirling around. And if it is true, this is not a good look for Kalen DeBoer or Alabama. Even his press conference this past Monday, he even looked like he didn't know what was going on. The reporters asked him, like, you know, last week you said that you felt like you had a good week of practice before Florida State. And he's like, I said that? And he's like, yeah. It's not looking good for Kalen DeBoer. I even had a friend compare him to Mark Richt, which is so funny. I understand why, but come on now. Anyway, fans are now, man, I've got Alabama fans or friends who are fans of the team. They're nervous about playing UL Monroe this weekend. Now, I understand that that was like one of those big upsets that they had against Saban in his early days at Alabama, but even for them to be like nervous about a game like that is kind of insane to me. In Saban's entire career, he only lost three games he was favored in. DeBoer is 4-14 in just his second season at Bama. This is definitely not a good look for them. Those losses obviously being Vanderbilt, Oklahoma, Michigan, and now Florida State. They were 13.5-point favorite and lost that game. So I'd say this for the hot seat update. Yeah, that thing is on fire, and he has got to put it out quick, and he has got to make the playoffs this year. That's the only way he's going to put that seat out, is either making the SEC championship or making the playoffs. It's not looking good for old DeBoer. Isaac, any final thoughts before we move on from this segment?
Man, I'm going to just say that I had a colleague at work who, obviously my friend Jim, he's a big Florida State fan. He goes to a lot of games in Tallahassee. And I had another colleague who was like, I don't know why he's going to that game. I mean, it's Alabama. And I looked at him and I said, because Florida State's going to win. That's why. Now, granted, I did pick Alabama on the pod, let me just say. But I had a hunch. And boy, the Seminoles stomped. The Doak was rocking. And it was a great Saturday in Tallahassee. He said it was a great time. They were soaked. You know, it poured during the second quarter. And then it was beautiful. And so I'm just thinking about how miserable I would have been in Florida if I'd been soaked and then it had been, you know, 85. And then it rained again after the game. And he said, yeah, I didn't storm the field with everybody else because I was soaked. And honestly, I just didn't want to pool with it. But nonetheless, what a great time for Florida State fans. And listen, who knows? The Noles might be back. Great win for Norvell and DeBoer. Clock's ticking.
Absolutely, the clock is ticking. I mean, I even said last week that, you know, I was not going to pick Alabama on a road game in Ty Simpson's first start to in a stadium that is so crazy. That atmosphere, like you said last week, it's going to be rocking, and it was. Those, man, that Florida State band, I know they're annoying, but they're awesome. They're loud. They're there for their team. But yeah, I said that I was not picking Alabama to cover a spread that big on the road in Ty Simpson's first start, and yeah, man, I ended up being correct. But since we're already there, let's review Florida State versus Alabama. Alabama, on their first drive, they had a 9-minute touchdown drive, and they actually looked for the first 9 minutes of the game like the best team in the country. And like my friend said, hang the banner for that one, because after that, it took a turn. Even when they missed a kick early, because they missed a field goal, it seemed like the tide was so back to the early ages of them having a crazy offense and no kickers. After that, though, FSU would go on to score 24 unanswered points. Like I said, they were running up and down the field. And Tommy Castellanos, boy, did he call his shot. We mentioned this last week. Take a listen to this clip of Tommy Castellanos from this past summer.
We stand on what I said, the confidence that I have in my teammates and the way we've been preparing and, you know, putting this preparation together this offseason. I just feel confident in the guys and the work that we've been putting in. So,
dude literally did it. He pulled a Babe Ruth. Castellanos would go 9 for 14 passing for 152 yards and 16 carries for 78 yards. The key factor in this game, though, while Tommy Castellanos was a main factor, the key factor that held it all together, the one behind it all, Gus freaking Malzahn, the new offensive coordinator at FSU, who's had plenty of experience beating Alabama and playing Alabama over the years. He knows what it takes to beat them. And man, that game plan was strong. Florida State would end up winning over Bama 31-17.
Man, next up we got LSU Clemson recap. Nothing but honestly good vibes from me. I mean, what a night in the other Death Valley. I mean, it was a great time. You know, we were surrounded by orange, and we found out there were quite a few LSU fans there. But after the game was over and the Clemson fans sadly exited their own stadium, which I thought was great, I told Maria, my girlfriend, I said, what I want is for the first time ever at a game, I wanted to be quiet. And she said, why? And I said, because we're the road team, you know. And, you know, we got it down on fourth down. Huge play call by Blake Baker. The spy for Perkins like that. Was 2022 Harold Perkins' freshman year. That was a beautiful play call. A spy on Klubnik. He got it done. And just looking at it, I mean, it was a great close. And, you know, we could talk about how, you know, Joey pointed out in the chat after the game, he's like, fourth down, you need 4 yards. You're on the 10-yard line or 12-yard line, and everybody goes to the end zone. Like, it's just ridiculous. And we could argue that's the case. I don't really care. I didn't want them to go to the end zone. I want them to get 4 yards, and they didn't. So, great game. I mean, LSU defense looked better than it has in years. I mean, the last time that defense looked remotely that well was the Arkansas game in 2022 when Harold Perkins had like 7 sacks or whatever. That was a crazy game. You know, now, it was like a 10-3 win. Super.
I was
defensive.
About to say that game was pretty close, wasn't it?
It was. It was a very close. It was like 10-3. It was somewhere similar to Saturday night. But a couple of stats here. 261 yards allowed, only 31 rushing. You know, LSU, on the other hand, on offense, had 108 yards rushing, and it's not much. I know that. And as a team, we only had 356 yards, but we held Clemson to 261. So we had 95 more yards of offense. And for the first time, in my opinion, for the first time in years, we had a game where the run game seemed like it was somewhat there. You know, it's a good Clemson defense. I feel like it'll get better. I think if the other line can continue to block like they did, give up 1 sack out of 45 snaps, an absolutely incredible game. The offensive line did a lot better than I thought. You know, I really thought Clemson's defensive front was going to put a lot of pressure on Nuss, and I felt like we did a better job at getting to Cade than they did to Garrett. I felt like as a whole, Whit Weeks was a beast getting through the line. His brother West, number 33, was on the field a lot. That was cool. Perk was back. Perk was playing well. You know, we had the secondary played really well, forced a lot of stops. And the LSU run game, 108 yards, I'm okay with that. I can live on that. I had obviously to get better. But Garrett, you know, Garrett was 28 for 38, threw for 232 yards, 1 touchdown. And it was the touchdown we needed. And to be fair, it was really cool, actually. It was the brother. So there was it was a DB. I can't remember his name. But there was a DB who was on Terrace Marshall Jr. in the 2020 National Championship, who his younger brother is now on the team, and he was guarding Tre'Davious Green on our touchdown pass in the fourth quarter. And, you know, well, the story goes, both of those guys from LSU scored. So, really, really cool. And Tre'Davious Green, I think he'll be big on offense. He was 6'7". He's 6'7", so I think he'll be big in the red zone moving forward. But really just a great time, a great game by the Tigers, the LSU Tigers, that is. And I think that it's going to be fun next season when Clemson comes to Death Valley South, the real one. I think it'll be fun. Clemson, they're still a great team, and I think they'll make a push. Obviously, they should run the ACC. But go Tigers. LSU got a big win. And, yeah.
And finally, last game we're going to talk about, you know, we had three big games this weekend. And what's so crazy, you know, you usually got to wait till like the 3:30, maybe, and you normally the 7 o'clock slate until you get like that big game. But we had three big ones. My heart was pumping all day long, bro. We had the LSU-Clemson on the nightcap. We had Alabama-Florida State at the 3:30. But at big noon kickoff on Fox, yep, we had Texas versus Ohio State. This game was something, man, you just couldn't write a script for, dude. Game day is in Columbus, Lee Corso's retirement Saturday. He picks Brutus on the field before kickoff. Preseason Heisman favorite Arch Manning is on the field in his first road start. But man, if this game was not a defensive masterclass, Ohio State defensively, they didn't miss a beat even after losing all of that talent. Arch Manning, however, yeah, that guy missed a beat. I understand. Listen, okay, I heard this argument a lot. Well, the Shoe's a tough place to play and they have a good defense and it was his first road start. I understand that. I get it. But you're talking about textbook slants, textbook swing passes, designed runs for a QB that has been so hyped up, has playing experience last year, not against great teams, but has playing experience last year. And he's overthrowing guys. He's putting balls in the dirt 2 feet behind his guy, behind his receivers. I don't understand. Arch Manning was 5 for 10 for 26 yards in the first half. And he ended the game with a QBR of 58. This is not what you would expect out of your preseason Heisman favorite. I just don't understand the hype. I said this last week. This is why I picked Ohio State, and I said I wanted Ohio State to win for this reason. I just did not understand the hype around Arch Manning. I just had not seen anything out of him that was like, oh, yeah, this guy's generational talent, except for his last name is Manning. Julian Sain, on the other hand, dude looked phenomenal. First game jitters, obviously, there, but he had a really solid start. 13 for 20, 126 yards, one touchdown, and a QBR of 74.5. And the other star of this game was actually not Jeremiah Smith, but wide receiver Carnell Tate, who had two receptions for 49 yards and a spectacular touchdown grab that he bobbled off the knee, pulled in and caught to give them a 14-0 lead. It doesn't sound like a lot, I know, but in a defensive matchup like this, that's a lot. He literally made the difference. You'll want to keep your eye on this kid. And right now, Ohio State is the clear-cut number one team in the country. But Texas, yeah, they got a lot to work on.
Now it's time for our game of the week. Our game of the week is going to be 15th ranked Michigan. The Wolverines heading to Norman to play the 18th ranked Sooners of Oklahoma at 7:30 p.m. on ABC.
Spread, Oklahoma 5.5. Isaac is still a little salty about Bryce Underwood at Michigan.
For those of you who didn't know, Bryce Underwood was a 5-star quarterback recruit. Obviously, he's the starter for Michigan this season because they don't have anybody else because, you know, well, there was a scandal. They won a championship. Everybody transferred, blah, 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 blah. But Bryce Underwood was committed to LSU. And then at the last minute of signing day might have been the spring of 24. He flips his commitment to Michigan after what they have called apparently is this champion circle NIL collective for the Michigan Wolverines. Who, just so we're clear, it doesn't make much sense because they say go big blue, but they're the Wolverines, kind of like Tennessee. Go big orange, you're the Volunteers, pick a mascot. But they offered him a $10 to $12 million NIL package. He flips from LSU, and you know, it is what it is. Let him go play in the Big Ten if he wants to play in some snow, have to worry about the game every year. Listen, we have multiple rivalry games. They just have one, and it's at the end. And over the past few years, they've done well. But I'm just saying, Baton Rouge's place to be, Ann Arbor. Is not. Carry on.
And now we know, obviously, Michigan ended up with freshman quarterback Bryce Underwood, who is definitely a stud, but OU went out and they picked up a stud of their own, the highly touted transfer quarterback John Mateer out of Washington State. He's looking to take charge of this offense, get them back to where they were a few years ago, like they were that great offenses under Lincoln Riley. It's like Brent Venables has come in and really fixed the defense, but now the offense is faltering. It's really flipped. It's really weird. So, yeah, John Mateer, he's hoping he can get it done.
That's a cool name, man. John Mateer. I like that. You know, last year we said there was no way they were going to get a win against Alabama, but you can never underestimate the home field advantage of Norman.
Michigan head coach Sharon Moore, he definitely wants to make a statement, especially after last season in week two. They lost to Texas, another SEC team. So he's definitely looking to get one over on the SEC this time.
Yeah, this is a big game for both teams who had such high hopes and ended up having extremely subpar seasons.
Well, what do you think? Can Sharon Moore pull it off?
It's in Norman on a Saturday night. Give me the Sooners. We're going to Norman on Saturday night. Give me the Sooners to get a win, a big win against Michigan. I like them to cover. I think a touchdown win is in order for the Oklahoma Sooners. I think that Michigan letting a JV team, I saw it on Facebook today, a JV team drop 17 and only winning by 17 is a really big deal. And listen, no disrespect to Bryce, but he's a freshman. If he'd been at LSU, he'd had some time to adjust to the environment that is the SEC, but he wanted to get paid. So you know what, buddy? Take your money and go to Boomer, put it on the Sooners, give it to him.
Man, I think this one's actually a really difficult pick. I also looked at that stat that New Mexico ended up scoring 17 on them. And Norman's a tough place to play, and John Mateer is going to play really well. I just know it. I think this game is really going to come down to who has the better defense. Man, give me Michigan. Here's why. I know it's a road game, but I trust Sherrone Moore. If Sherrone Moore can go in a hotly contested rivalry game like Ohio State, can go to the Shoe and win, and he's got a defense that played lights out against Alabama last year with no offense. They just ran the ball the whole time. I understand that Oklahoma's defense is probably better than Alabama's, but man, all they had to do was run the ball, QB power, and their defense showed up and showed out. So give me Michigan in what will be, I think, an offensive game, but the defense has got to be the thing that stands up. That's gonna what it's going to come down to. So give me the Michigan defense to win this game. And we do have Joey's picks for you. Joey is also picking Oklahoma with Isaac.
All right, now we've got 11th-ranked Illinois coming to Durham, just a few miles down the road from me in North Carolina, to take on the Duke Blue Devils at 12 p.m. on ESPN.
Illinois, they come in ranked at number 11 after this week one AP poll and all the shakeups we had, riding a smash-mouth football opening win, and they are loaded with returning starters, highlighted by quarterback Lou Altmyer, who went for 217 yards and 3 touchdowns last week, wide receiver Hank Beattie, who went for 108 receiving yards, record 133 punt return yards, including a punt return touchdown, and a dominant defense anchored by Gabe Jacobs. They're returning 16 starters from last year's 10-win squad. Illinois boasts one of the most experienced rosters in the nation, coordinators on both sides of the ball, and the starting quarterback all return for a third straight season. This is remarkable continuity in today's college football game, considering the transfer portal, how often coaches are leaving. I mean, what we see Jeff Levy at Mississippi State, but I mean, he was at Oklahoma, then Ole Miss, and now he's a head coach. They're moving in and out of teams. But yeah, this is great continuity. They're a reloaded team. They look like they got a big win this past week. However, now comes the real test. Road game, trip to Durham in an energized stadium with an energized Duke squad. Isaac, what do you got for me on Duke?
Well, Duke is led by a former Tulane quarterback transfer, Darian Mensah, who dazzled in his debut. He had a great night in Durham. He had 389 yards, 3 touchdowns. Duke's offense promises explosiveness. Mensah's portal move was one of the most hyped in the offseason, and it was valued at $8 million worth of NIL money. And I'll be honest, I was shocked to see it because he had a great season at Tulane. And Tulane, like, they were rolling. They had K-State on the ropes last season. Tulane being in New Orleans, you know, a few miles down the road from the Tigers, it's a really big rivalry. I wish they'd bring that back. Big rivalry down in Louisiana. But Darian Mensah's a good QB, and he delivered right out of the gate. Duke's front seven suffocated Elon. 3 sacks, 10 tackles for loss. Their ability to penetrate and pressure the quarterback will be a focal point. Under Coach Manny Diaz, Duke looks to capitalize on the 2024 season where they went 9-4 and really make a statement with a win like this against a top 12 Illinois team.
Duke under Manny Diaz is not an afterthought anymore. They're a confident squad and they're looking to prove that they belong. So Isaac, do they do it this week or does Illinois, do they come in and prove that they're the real squad?
Man, I've got to say, last time I looked at this, I believe Illinois was a 2.5-point favorite, if I'm not mistaken. It's a very close line. This is a tough one because Duke at half was up like, I don't know, 9-6 or 10-6 on Elon. Super close. I almost was like, man, I think Elon's going to win this game. And then the second half happened. Man, I got to be honest, it's a Saturday noon game in Durham. Duke is looking to make a big win today game. Illinois, they've been good in football. It's weird saying Illinois is a football school and they have a good basketball program. Whew. I don't love this pick, but I am going to go with the Duke Blue Devils. I think Duke's going to get it done on Saturday. It's going to be a big one. I don't love this pick, but I'm going to roll with the quarterback. I'm going to roll with Darian Mensah and the Duke offense. I think that he's going to show up and it's going to be a big upset for Duke on Saturday in Durham. I don't love it. I very well might miss, but I've got the boys from Durham.
So I came into this week really thinking that, man, like, we got a lot of boring games. I'm going to know a lot of these off the bat. But now I don't even know, dude, Illinois or Duke. Like, Illinois is a really good team, but I trust the player that Darian Minta is. I trust Manny Diaz. Gosh, man, this is so difficult because it's on the road. Man, I think if this was a night game, I would have to pick Duke, but I'm going to go Illinois here. I'm going to play it safe just a little bit, but I really do think that they have a lot of returning starters. They're gelling really well. Returning coordinators on both sides of the ball that know how to play call well. So I think I've just got to go with the experience here. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. That's cool. If Duke gets a big win, that's awesome, man. Like, sometimes, like, yeah, we get these picks wrong, but it's so fun seeing these teams that you don't think have a chance, like, come out, play a great game. And even if they don't win, if it's close, like, if they're, like, it's disappointing for sure, but, like, if they're close and they're playing really well, it's awesome to see. It's fun to see. And it actually makes the game more fun and more enjoyable, except when it's Alabama. But luckily, we didn't have to do that this week. We got to see Florida State win a game. So, which is not, we didn't see that a lot last year. And Joey is picking Illinois as well. It's time to head to Iowa for the Cy-Hawk Showdown. That's right. It's Iowa versus number 16 Iowa State at 12 p.m. on Fox. And it's Iowa State favored by 3.5. Here's the Cy-Hawk breakdown. Iowa, they battle two truths. Long road dominance and aims and a shaky passing game. Iowa State, they ride confidence from a 2-0 start. Obviously got that big win in Ireland against K-State, who now they're kind of sus, or they look kind of sus after they almost lost to FCS North Dakota. But Iowa State, they're averaging nearly 250 passing yards a game. So the offseason narrative is settled. Iowa State is dangerous. And with this rivalry's defensive nature, special teams and field position could be the game's turning point. So guys, buckle up. It's Cy-Hawk Saturday.
Let me just say, I love that. I love the nickname Cy-Hawk Saturday. Extremely cool. One of the few cool things about the Big Ten. That's right, Mason. We know last season we had a thriller that ended with Iowa State walking it off on a 54-yard field goal. But traditionally, the Cy-Hawk games are defensive, low scoring. Imagine that, an Iowa game, low scoring, defense. Sound familiar? Only one of the last six contests exceeded 40 total points. Iowa's coming off a sluggish offensive showing again. This is not a surprise. Including a subpar pass game, though they did back it up with a dominating 310-yard rushing attack, the most in a season opener for them since 2002. Freshman Xavier Williams stood out with 122 rushing yards. But Iowa State looks confident. They're 2-0, 1-0 in the Big 12 after a big win in the Aer Lingus Bowl against K-State. They're averaging 247 passing yards per game to this point and a stout defense, especially against the run. Powered by that passing offense, they pose a challenge if Iowa fails to shut down the aerial attack. Just one final note, Iowa State hasn't won this rivalry at home since 2011. What do we think happens this time, Mason?
So first, I want to say Joey is picking Iowa State. Just want to put that out there. For me, I think if Iowa had a crazy passing game, I would say 100% Iowa wins this game because we saw K-State like throw the ball all over Iowa State when they weren't turning it over, fumbling on the run. We saw them throw all over Iowa State in that game. So give me Iowa State to win this game at home. They haven't won here in this rivalry since 2011. So yeah, I'm going to take the Cyclones in this one to win this game with their stout defense, their crazy passing attack. I trust Matt Campbell. I know that their offense is good enough to get it done. And I think this year they're going to score more than 40 points total this year, both teams. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, this one, you know, it's kind of tough because Iowa, like I mentioned, I know I was kind of digging on them a few minutes ago, but offensively, they've always been slow. They've in the recent years been relatively low scoring. Defensively, they put it to you. But I'll be honest, I'm also going to go with the Cyclones in this one, a TBD triple pick. I think that the Cyclones get it done first time since 2011. I don't love the fact that Iowa doesn't have a great offense to counteract. And looking back on how I picked K-State over the Cyclones in the Aer Lingus Bowl, I think the Cyclones I think their defense is going to get it done. They really put it to K-State until late. They kind of held them in check, and that was a rough game too. We had, you know, 15 turnovers in the first 2 minutes, but yeah, give me the Cyclones on Saturday.
Yeah, that would be just your luck, wouldn't it, to pick Iowa State this time around and lose?
Listen, man, it happens. That's why we do the pod.
Oh, boy. We got an East Texas matchup. Baylor versus number 17 SMU at 12 p.m. on the CW. Boy, that just does not sound right, does it? The CW.
Yeah, the CW, man, like, I don't even know what channel that is anymore, truth be told. I was 20 growing up, though. I do know that. It's the Baptist versus the Methodist. Baylor coming off a loss against Auburn is a three-point underdog to SMU on Saturday. Despite an excellent offensive showing, their defense just couldn't get it together. Their offense kept them in the game, and as soon as they would score, I'm like, all right, Baylor's still in it. We got this. Auburn would score, like, within the same breath. They're constantly chasing points against an Auburn offense who had no problems. They really made it happen easily on Saturday.
I was actually pleasantly surprised with Jackson Arnold's performance. I really thought, like, there was a lot in the offseason that made me think that he was not going to be confident, that he was going to have problems, he was going to turn the ball over, he wasn't going to be able to run as well as he wanted, he wasn't going to be able to pass. Now, partially I was right, he didn't pass that well, but he ran all over them. It was like both offenses had one play. Auburn had QB power, Baylor had slants, and that was all they ran the entire game. But I really thought that Auburn was going to struggle with J.A. at the helm, and that just wasn't the case.
Yeah, I mean, we still need to see what he looks like against an SEC defense. But yeah, he looked really, really good on Saturday. But so did Sawyer Robertson, quarterback of Baylor, who basically put the team on his back, throwing for 419 yards and three touchdowns. He kept Baylor in it despite the defense having an underwhelming performance. Like I said, every time they would score, the defense, they would give it up.
And on the other side at SMU, we have none other than Kevin Jennings, who is a great quarterback. Jennings led his team to a historic run last year, the ACC championship and the playoffs. Obviously, neither one of those games ended like they wanted to, but still a crazy run. He's looking to do the same by getting a big win here against their East Texas foes, starting the season off right. Get a little win versus an FCS opponent, and then, you know, get another Power 4 opponent at home. Get that win, get the season started off right. Baylor's defense, though, man, I tell you what, they're going to need to tighten up their quarterback contain to stop this guy if they want any chance of winning this game. Because if you think Jackson Arnold can do it, I 100% promise you, so can Kevin Jennings.
However, SMU will also need to tighten up their defensive scheme. They let East Texas A&M into the red zone six times this past Saturday. Now, they won 42-13, but it feels like they should have won by more. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, they were like a 50-point favorite in that game. Or it might have been like 38. I know it was close to 40 or more. It was a big
either
game.
Either way, big, big spread.
Yeah, huge, huge. Now, obviously, this is a very heavy offense, weak defense kind of game. You know, this game feels like one who, based on week one and based on past season performance, it's an offensive-heavy game. Kind of seems like it could go either way, especially with only a three-point spread in SMU's favor. But ultimately, I'm not picking first. Mason, who you got?
It's another one of those games where I was like, I know who I'm going to pick. And I'm like, I don't. Baylor, yeah, they got Sawyer Robinson. He can and Michael Trigg at tight end, by the way, who basically changed the game for them. He was their entire offense. It's the only guy that I felt like Sawyer Robinson felt comfortable throwing to. The thing is, with looking at the past games that they've played just this season, in week one, obviously, is the only game we have to run on, but Baylor played a really good team in Auburn, who played extremely well defensively. They got like 52 blue chip players. And then you've got SMU, who played, you know, a nobody, played an FCS school, let them into the red zone six times. I am going to go with SMU to win this game, not because they're ranked. My main reason for picking SMU in this game is because I really like Kevin Jennings, and I think that their defense is going to be better than Baylor's defense. If they game plan the same way Auburn did against Baylor, just QB power the entire time, I mean, maybe Baylor looks at it and hones in on it, but, you know, I don't think that they can make a quick turnaround like that in a week. So give me SMU to win this game at home against Baylor. Dave Aranda and the Bears are going to start. It's unfortunate. They're going to start off 0-2, which is my prediction.
Yeah, Mason, this one, you know, coming into this, I'm thinking, okay, obviously I'm going to go with Baylor. I mean, I rode with Baylor last week against Auburn. It should be a relatively easy pick. But after looking at this and knowing how Baylor's defense played against Auburn, they could not adjust. And with just a weak turnaround time, a quarterback like Kevin Jennings, an SMU offense that, you know, pushed Clemson to the brink last year of winning the ACC in their first year in the All-Coast Conference, I'm also going to go with SMU. I think they're going to get it done. It's a home game. It's a close game. I like them to cover. It's only a three-point spread. I think they do cover maybe by a touchdown. But, yeah, I don't think Baylor's defense is going to have what they need to be able to get this dub. And just so everybody knows, Joey is picking Baylor in this one, opposite of Mason and I.
Isaac, brother, the wait is over. The border war is back.
That's right. After a 14-year hiatus, Kansas and Missouri are set to clash once again this Saturday, September 6th, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The Tigers host the Jayhawks at Thoreau Field in Columbia, Missouri. The other Tigers in the SEC. Why that's a common mascot, I don't know. But nonetheless, it's the 121st meeting in this historic rivalry.
I think it was like the 1880s, and they were like, hey, I wonder what would be a good team mascot? Hey, the Tigers, they sound pretty scary and intimidating. Yeah, the Tigers, yeah. Anyway, absolutely, the stakes are high here. We haven't seen this game in like 14 years. It's a long, historic battle. Missouri actually holds the all-time series 56-55. So this is actually really important here because Kansas has the opportunity to tie this one up. They got to go on the road to Como, though. Missouri, they entered the game as a 6.5-point favorite according to the latest betting lines. But Kansas, man, you know they're not going to back down. They're looking to get this big win. They're coming off two dominant wins to start the season, one against Fresno State, and then I think last week one against Wagner. I don't know why I knew that, but I guess I just saw it. Yeah, Kansas against Wagner, two big dominant wins, and they've got the guys to do it.
Yeah, I mean, no disrespect, though. They've outscored their opponent 70-14 in the first two games of the season. But again, it was Fresno State and Wagner.
But Missouri, and I know we're going to talk about them in a second, but Missouri played Central Arkansas and scored like 70 points on them. I'm just saying.
Listen here, brother. I'm not going to defend Mizzou either. I'm not going to defend Mizzou. It's okay. It's okay. Now, Kansas quarterback Jalen Daniels has been super efficient. Defense has been stifling. Again, Fresno State and Wagner can't even really point on the map. I know where Fresno State is. It's in the name. Wagner, it's probably in Texas. I don't know. Feels like a Texas school. Texas is big. Feels like it would fit. But they're looking to end a three-game losing streak to Missouri. And again, they have not played in 14 years. And they need one win this Saturday to tie up the all-time record.
Wagner is actually in New York. On the other side, Missouri is riding high after a 61-6 victory over Central Arkansas. There's been a lot of hype around Missouri because of this, but like even you like look at Florida, they played Long Island University and won 55-0. Like these are the things you're supposed to do. They're like, oh my gosh, yes, Missouri, look at it. We lost Brady Cook and we're winning this crazy big game. Good. That's what you're supposed to do. Welcome to the SEC. I don't feel bad for you. Like, hello, this is what it is. Quarterback Bo Pribula, though, he did look good. He threw for 283 yards and two touchdowns in his debut, adding two more scores on the ground. Pribula's performance has certainly energized the Tigers' offense, but they'll need to maintain that momentum against the Kansas defense that's definitely been tough to crack.
Absolutely, and let's not forget the historical significance. This rivalry dates back to 1891 and has had its share of memorable moments.
Indeed, from the early days to the modern era, the Border War has been a showcase of college football passion. And with both teams entering this game undefeated, it's shaping up to be another classic.
Well, with that said, Mason, Kansas needs a win to tie the all-time record. Let's talk predictions. Who do you think takes it this weekend?
Boy, easy. Give me Kansas. I don't trust Missouri. They're like the dark sheep of the SEC. Now, that has nothing to do with my pick. I'm just trying to roast them. I love you guys. Sorry. Anyway, no, I got Kansas. I think I trust Jalen Daniels. He's actually had experience. I think this, like, they didn't have the season that they wanted to have last year. And I think that this is shaping up to be one of the good ones. They've got Pickett at wide receiver. They've got some guys on the ground who can run the ball. They've got a mobile quarterback in Jalen Daniels who we've seen and has proven and can play well if he can stay healthy. If he stays healthy this game, they got to go on the road. But, man, Como can be tough, but you got, what, a 3:30 game in Como. And, you know, Eli Drinkwitz, who is a good head coach, but, you know, he's got a not veteran team. He lost a lot of guys to the draft this year. Lost a lot in the wide receiving core, too. So who's Pribula going to throw to? I'm not sure, but I know who Jalen Daniels is throwing to. Give me Kansas.
Oh, man, I am split down the middle. I don't know. I have no clue who to pick. I really, really want to pick Missouri simply for SEC bias. It's a home game. But you know what? Only thing I know about them is that their coach's last name is Drinkwitz. Other than that, I don't know who the receivers are. I don't know who this guy is. I knew Brady Cook. He's gone. Give me the Jayhawks. I think they get it done on Saturday. I think that they're going to tie the all-time record, the border war, the battle for the Patrick Mahomes state, if you will. Vomit. Yeah. Give me Kansas on Saturday. And Joey is picking Missouri. So it could go really well for us. Could not. Had it happen this past weekend, but hey, guys, that's why we do it.
All right, folks, buckle up. SEC action continues. We got number 20 Ole Miss in Kentucky. They're about to throw down this Saturday at 3:30 p.m. on ABC.
Man, this is going to be good. Two teams coming off week one wins, both trying to make a statement. Kentucky squeaked past Toledo 24-6, which is kind of sad because I think at one point it was like 21-3, maybe. I don't know. It felt like that at one point they were up rather large. And Ole Miss absolutely ran through Georgia State 63-7. It's not a typo, 63-7. But two things. Number one, it's a Lane Kiffin offense. Number two, it's Georgia State. And number three, again, going back to the last game with Missouri, it's the SEC. It's what you're supposed to do.
Ole Miss, though, they did look like they kind of had a cheat code on offense. Austin Simmons, their new starting quarterback, he threw for over 340 yards and three touchdowns. But let's be honest, they did turn it over a couple times against a team they probably shouldn't have. Kentucky might be able to capitalize if they stay disciplined.
Definitely possible. And Kentucky's defense isn't bad at all. Led by Humphrey Grace, if he's healthy, that's a big if. He is their defensive anchor. Without him at 100%, Ole Miss might have an easier time this weekend running their spread game.
And here's a little extra spice for this game, if you will. Remember, Kentucky beat Ole Miss on the road in the SIP for homecoming last year. Can you imagine doing homecoming and losing to a team that ended up going 4-8 last year? So, yeah, for the Rebels, there's definitely a revenge factor this time around. They're going to be looking to get back at the Wildcats in Lexington.
The Wildcat fans are loud. The energy in the Bluegrass State, it could be a lot if the Rebels aren't ready for the SEC atmosphere. Simmons could feel some heat in the pocket.
And as a Georgia fan, trust me, Isaac isn't kidding. I know all about that. Kentucky's offense is, well, they're just trying to find their rhythm. Zach Calzada, this is the quarterback. He's a transfer quarterback, but this is the guy who beat Alabama at Texas A&M in 2021. He had a rough opener, completing just 10 passes for 85 yards. That's not going to scare anyone. Not in this conference, but he's got weapons. If he clicks, this game could be closer than people expect. I mean, you know, we saw it last year. So prediction time, Isaac, who's walking out of Kroger with a win?
I'm going to say whoever had the coupons, give me the Rebels. I don't think that Kentucky's offense, they're going to have the time. They won by 8 points against Toledo. No disrespect, but you cannot let Lane Kiffin walk into your stadium coming off an 8-point win against who? Toledo? Come on now. Give me the Rebels. I'm going to be honest. I hope I lose this pick. I don't want the Rebels to win. Ole Miss is something else that I call them. But I do think they get the win on Saturday. And that's a good sale right there.
Dude said whoever's walking out with the coupons. Yeah, I'm with Isaac and Joey. They both have Ole Miss, and I have Ole Miss as well. I think Austin Simmons is playing really well right now. But Lane Kiffin knows, do not underestimate this atmosphere. Luckily, it's not a night game, but, you know, this is definitely that revenge factor, but you can't let it be that. You want the revenge, but it can't drive your game. You got to play smart. You got to make good decisions. You got to get the ball down the field and score. You got to hit the open man. You got to run through the hole. It's easy. You just do it, man. And so I think if Ole Miss just goes in there, play smart, does the stuff they're supposed to do, they're going to come away with the win, no problem.
All right, folks, we've got a game here to wrap up the slate. We probably all know the answer to, but nonetheless, we've got South Florida versus 13th-ranked Florida at 4:15 on the SEC Network. We now know, after watching South Florida decimate Boise State, that Ashton Jeanty was their entire offense. As I said earlier, Boise, what are you doing? But it doesn't take away from how good this South Florida team is and can be.
Yes, sir. The Bulls have waited a long time to get this guy back from injury, but they have gotten quarterback Byron Brown back, and boy, did it show on Friday. Using his legs on 14 carries for 47 yards and two touchdowns, 253 total yards. It's definitely going to be interesting to see this guy matched up against DJ Lagway. Not that they, obviously, we know quarterbacks don't play against each other, but they're very similar in their styles. Both mobile quarterbacks, both have a great arm, and they use it when they need to. Florida, they had a great start to the season. I mentioned this earlier. They blew out Long Island 55-0, threw up a goose egg. But if things go the way I think they might, this could be a real test for Florida. I mean, you look at the way South Florida played last week. They played a little bit sluggish. However, they got this big win. I mean, Boise State doesn't have a bad defense, and this is another Group of Five team. And I'm not saying that South Florida is going to come out and get this win. It would not be likely if that happened. However, they could give Florida some fits. So, Isaac, what are the key factors in this game?
Well, Mason, that's a great question. With the spread being Florida favored by 17.5, it gives us a pretty good indication of what's going to happen here. But even so, Florida will need to get their offense going early, and defensively, contain Brown at QB. Florida gave up 155 rushing yards per game last season, ranking 77th in the country in rush defense. Sucks to be a Florida Gator. If they can key on stopping the run, and more specifically, the quarterback run, they can do well. But for South Florida, they need to attack the ground game and play call better. Stick with what's working to get down the field and limit the mistakes. That should be the main goal for any team who's over a 10-point dog against higher caliber teams looking to pick up a big win. And so we already know who's probably going to win, but I'll say this. This is a big one because Billy Napier is trying to finally right the ship and put a staple in Gainesville for his tenure there as coach of the Gators. So we know who's probably going to win, but you just never know.
Yeah, but honestly, I think we know. Obviously, I'm going Florida here. Joey's also going Florida here. I think it would just be stupid, honestly, to pick South Florida. Not that it's going to be close. I mean, the spread's 17.5. That's a big spread. It tells you all you need to know right there. This is a group of five school versus a power five school with a really good quarterback and a really good defense. And I think they're much improved from last year. I honestly expected them to score a little bit more against an FCS school like Long Island. However, I do think, though, that USF could definitely cover this spread. But I don't think that Florida would lose this game. So give me Florida.
Yeah, and honestly, I'll say this about 18-point spreads. Wake Forest, who is not a great football school. They're not really a great anything. Well, they're good at baseball. I apologize. They're good at baseball. They were favored by 18 against Kennesaw State on Saturday in Winston-Salem, 12 minutes from my apartment, and they won 10-9. But I've got the Gators in this one on Saturday. I think it would be dumb, really, to pick South Florida. I think Billy Napier and the boys get it done. I mean, there's not much to be said. South Florida could cover, but I think either way, Florida gets the win, and that's that.
All right, that wraps up our week two previews. What a lineup. Border Wars, SEC battles, and some revenge games on the schedule. Man, my head's spinning just thinking about it, baby.
Yeah, tell me about it. Week two is stacked. Injuries, revenge stories, high-powered offenses. Everything we love about college football is coming at us this weekend.
And the best part? We get to watch it all unfold and debate every crazy moment with you guys. Make sure you're following us for updates, predictions, and maybe a few hot takes after the game.
Exactly. Hit us up on socials. Let us know if we got any picks right or horribly wrong. Either way, we're here for the chaos. This is why we do it. We love college football.
That's it from us for week two. Enjoy the games, soak in the chaos, and we'll be back next week breaking everything down, all the highlights, upsets, and everything in between.
Thanks for listening. And remember, college football never sleeps, and neither do we. And always remember,
no matter what team you pull for, if you're on God's side, you're always on the winning team. Just know that there is a Father in heaven who loves you, who created you. Romans 5:8 tells us that while we were still sinners, while we were still his enemies, he sent his only son to die for us. We're praying for our listeners. If you have any questions about that on the gospel or how to be saved, first of all, the Bible tells us that if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart that Jesus is Lord and that God raised him from the dead on the third day, then you shall be saved. And if you have any more questions about that, please hit us up on the comments section, hit us up on our DMs on Instagram or TikTok, and you know, let us know how we can be praying for you guys. We'd love to hear from you. We just appreciate you guys so much for listening. If you would, like this video, subscribe, leave a comment, and just grow the page. If you like the video, share it with your friends and subscribe. Come back next week because we're going to be here talking some college football. And we're super excited to see you after week two as we head into week three. Bye-bye.
Later.